Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Monday, January the 20th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. We would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It's a delight to be here with everybody who chooses to join us and continue our study with the ancient Aramaic first century process of internal forgiveness. It's a mouthful when you think about it. We had a delightful privilege last night. Many of you have been listening to the show and heard that we're working on creating a heartland south in Costa Rica, and that Jeannie and I are going to be heading there in a couple of weeks and immerse ourselves in the study of Spanish, because it's a country where most, except for the expats that are there, and there are a lot of Americans, Canadians, and such, but otherwise it's mostly a Spanish-speaking country. So we're going to be doing some interesting learning. And so we had the invitation for the first time in 45 years of doing this work. By the way, I started this work when I was 5, so you can figure out my age from there, we were invited into a Spanish church, and last night went and spoke and had a young lady who was translating for us, and it was just such an awesome, sweet energy. And we spoke about this idea of what human life is, and of course, our definition, our ongoing repeated reminder that the definition of human life is hold a newborn child. You know what human life is, and when you're functioning without that, you're in trouble. And so that the real work of Yeshua is to return us to the state where we live in a love-based mind, that we're connected to that awesome active presence of love 24/7, 365. And so we had fun doing that, and we're actually waiting for a call right now from the pastor of that church, because, of course, in the short time of a Sunday service, we didn't have the opportunity to present the whole forgiving process. And so they're setting up a time for us to come back before we leave Branson and to do the full Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop and the reality management worksheet in Spanish. So that's going to be a fun project. There's another thing that's happening that's not so much fun that we'd like to inform you of. A young lady that you've heard from on the show, she's actually been our reminder to every month. Jane Evanstar has tithed to us now, has supported our work for years. And yesterday afternoon I called just to say hello. We usually talk every week or so. And her daughter answered the phone, and about 2 hours earlier, Lady Jane had left her body, had passed away. I'm not sure exactly what age she was. She was kind of a graceful young lady, probably well into her 80s, I'm not sure. But she's left the physical plane, and the last few times I'd talked to her, and she's been on the show and shared that she's been having some challenges. And I think she was ready to go. But I just invite everybody, if you knew Lady Jane, if you'd been to Heartland when she was there, you know what a grand dame she was. And so just hold her in that space of love and just see her going to the light in her journey in the next step. And I'm sure she'll be there guiding us. I don't know whose voice is going to call in every month and remind us that tithing is appropriate. But in any event, Lady Jane, we love you, we appreciate you, and we certainly send you off with the most hearty and wondrous blessing that we can come up with. And we appreciate you very much for all the years that you've been in our lives. So that's kind of... Go ahead, sweetie.
What was also pretty cool is that just about the time that she passed, we were in a gospel singing, listening to this lady, and when she spoke, not necessarily when she sang, but when she spoke, she sounded just like Lady Jane. And we had commented a couple times, you know, man, she really sounds like her. And so then that also is what prompted us to call her when we got back. And so just about the time that we were commenting that this singer sounded like Lady Jane was about the time that she passed.
Yeah, actually, one of the things that I usually do when I think of someone I need to call is I will actually call them. And by the way, if I've ever done that to you in the middle of the night, excuse me, I usually call so that it goes in my phone queue and then I hang up so it doesn't actually ring through. Once in a while, it does ring through. But when we were sitting in that theater, I had actually called Jane, and this was about the very time that she was leaving her body, according to her daughter. And then when we got back from the show, I called her and we were given the news that she had left. So just see her in a blessing. I think she was experiencing quite a bit of trauma in her body before she left and was ready to go. So anyway, that's what's happening on the home front. And other than that, one of the things that I want to bring around in the conversation being the beginning of the new year is the reminder that when we understand how the eternal forces of the universe operate and we harmonize with them, life tends to move pretty well. When we fall out of harmony with those things, then we tend to bump and grind against things and wonder why this is happening to us again. And recognizing that, you know, there's a whole course that we do called Laws of Living, a 16-day intensive, that law has nothing to do with the rule of a superior, and there is no requirement whatsoever for obedience. There is nobody in the universe, including the Creator, that requires you to obey any law, because you can't obey a law. It isn't about obedience. That's the mistaken conversation that we've had due to our separation. Got nothing to do with obedience. Law just happens. If you know how it happens, if you know how it operates, and you harmonize with it, things go great. You get to do awesome things. You know, like, for instance, engineers don't design and build airplanes by violating the law of gravity. An airplane flies because the engineer who designed it understood the law of gravity and worked within how it operates. And so airplanes fly. Seemingly, you know, mind-boggling, this machine that weighs tons and tons and tons gets up in the air and flies. How does it do that? Because somebody understood the way the law worked. When you go back to the ancient Aramaic, law happens. It's not about obedience to a superior. It's just the way the system works. When we understand, and if you go back into the ancient Aramaic, you see a conversation about all kinds of areas of life. The laws on how to handle your land. You know, the land works in a certain way. If you're going to grow food and you know how the land works, then your food is going to be nourishing and feed you. You go back and you'll see an ancient scriptural story about a man who has 10 wives, and each of his wives bake him a loaf of bread, and he starves to death eating that bread because the land laws have been violated. If we don't know how to replenish and support the land, then it's not going to give us nutrition, and illness is going to be a result. You take a look at, you know, the world today says, oh, we don't know why there's so much cancer. We don't know why there's so much emphysema and, you know, and lung disease and heart disease. We don't have any idea. Yeah, we know exactly why. we've been violating the laws. We've stepped outside of the way the game operates, and our refusal to come back into harmony with law leaves us creating problems for ourselves. So if we understand how the law operates, then we don't get banged around by the avoidable collisions with that law. You know, a person who stands on the edge of a cliff does not have to have fear of heights in order to say, I think I'll stay back from the edge, because they know that the law says if they step off the cliff, at the bottom, bones break. Now, many people want to push the idea of fear in terms of this thing called law. And many, sadly, in the religious arena, terrorize people around this idea of law. And the terror and the fear itself is a violation of law. When we step into a mind of terror and fear, we just violated the first law, which is that of maintaining the condition of love in our minds. You know, when you go back to that first law, the word the Greeks used was love, but the word isn't love at all in Aramaic. It's rachma. And when they said to Yeshua, you know, what's the first law? What's most important in this whole thing that you're telling us? And he says you must maintain rachma, a condition in your mind, when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain your human life. It doesn't say, you know, have love for God, neighbor, and as for self, as the Greeks translated. But it says, have rachma for the Creator, for neighbor, in order to maintain your human life, in order to maintain self. And so that filter in the frontal lobes of the brain is literally a filter over intentions that allows your mind to only use intentions keyed to love, and the starting point of activity in human life is intentions. So it's really important. It's not the finish point, but it's the starting point, and that's why the word rachma was used, and that filter is also a gateway into which human life enters. So the minute somebody starts terrorizing another, threatening another with hell or whatever, that gateway closes. Now human life is gone. Now all that somebody has to rely on is whatever's stored in their body's mind, in their carbon-based memory system. And so they cycle and cycle and cycle through the past, wondering, why is this happening to me again? Because they have no idea how to open the gateway to their human lives, which means a whole new life happens. Everything around them totally reorganizes when this gateway opens and the active presence of love shows up within them. And if they're cycling through old patterns, it's because in the arena where they're experiencing those patterns, there is a blockage in carbon-based memory. And rachma, that filter in the frontal lobes of the brain, is not active. And so this person's stuck with that old pattern, that old way of doing things that was stored from the generations. You know, you look at that statement of physiology and physics that was given, and it sounds like it's got something to do with theology, but when you decode it from the Aramaic, it's not theology. And here you hear the Creator saying that the sins of the fathers, and that word sin, remember, in Aramaic is just an archery term. Energy patterns that are off the mark of our parents and their parents and their parents, it says, will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations of those who hate me. Now, in Aramaic, that word hate in that particular passage speaks not of hate as in a love-hate relationship, but those who are separated from me. Who's the me that's speaking? The Creator. Who is the Creator? Love. Those who are separated from love, those whose rachma filter is not active or set, are separated from love, and therefore new input, new ways of doing things, a new creation cannot occur in their lives. What are they stuck with? The energy patterns of the previous generations. In other words, all they've got to rely on, because that gateway for new input is not open to them, all they've got to rely on for their creative process is whatever's stored in their genetics from the generations, whatever's stored in their emotional bodies, whatever's stored in their minds from the generational patterns. So it's a brilliant statement when you realize you either are connected to literally on a cellular level the active presence of love, and are available then for new input, or if that gateway is closed, all you can do is replicate the past. The body's mind is nothing but a replicate mind. If I say don't think about the color of your car, you know, I'll say that oftentimes in a workshop, and then I'll ask people, well, now what's happening? And they'll say, well, I'm thinking about the color of my car. And my offering is, no, you're not thinking about the color of your car. Brain cells are resonating that hold stored information from the past. If your car is white or black or green or blue, whatever it is, when I ask that question, what's stored in your carbon-based memory system is that particular color. When I vibrate with my voice, the brain cells for the color of your car, that content of your mind fires. And it, most people think that that's thinking. And the truth is, if most people said what they thought, they'd be speechless because all they're doing is cycling old information, and that's not thinking. Thinking doesn't happen until we open this filter, follow this first law, Rachma, gateway literally to the mind of the Creator, to the mind of love, which, you know, if you go back to Paul, and again, it's not a religious idea. It's the most refreshing, most empowering idea you'll ever find in the universe. To be of like mind with Christ. What does that mean? The mind that the man that we call Yeshua lived in was the mind of love, the mind of the Creator. All kinds of understanding comes from that mind. But if we are separated, and you know, unfortunately the Greeks translated the word as hate, if we are separated from the literal active presence of love in any given circumstance, you know, if I think about my child and in me is anger toward my child, then I can't do new behavior with my child. If I think about my spouse, my employer, you know, any particular event about myself, and I don't have that gateway open, then I'm stuck with my replicate mind, and I'm going to repeat. And I feel very blessed the universe reserved that title for me. Why is this happening to me again? Because it's so obvious, because that's what virtually everybody's doing, is simply playing out the same patterns. And, of course, when they play out the same patterns, because most people live in denial, they say, why is everybody else like that? You know, I go into relationships. Why is every relationship the same? Because you're the same. It's not the relationship that's the same. It's the patterns in you that play out the same dynamic. If you come from a world where your power person blamed you all the time, then notice that you're stuck with that error energy, and notice you'll always find a reason to blame people. If your power person gave you a message that, let's say, for instance, you were incompetent. You couldn't do anything right. Notice, and your mind won't show you this accurately, but notice what you do is you send messages of incompetence to everybody all the time. And that's done because the replicate mind can only repeat itself. It can only replay. And what men call laws, that is, what men pass as rules to try to force other men into behavior that they want them to do, are written out of that replicate mind content, and reflect the protection of that content and the desire to play that content out again and again and again. And there's no room for the actual law to commit, the actual action of the eternal forces. An example that I like to use to demonstrate the idea of the insanity of entering into a field without understanding how that field operates. Again, remember, law happens. Imagine that you're building yourself a beautiful new 5,000 square foot home, and you want somebody to wire it. Who would want to, knowing that you're going to be asleep in your bed in that new house at 3 o'clock in the morning when the power is turned on, who would want my great-great-grandmother to wire your house? My great-great-grandmother does not have the liberty to wire anybody's house. When they turn the power on, it's probably going to burn down if she tries to wire, because she doesn't know anything about the laws of electricity. You want an expert at the laws of electricity. You want a man or a woman who knows how electricity flows and what its laws are, how it operates, what happens. And if you have an expert that does that, then you can confidently be asleep in 3 o'clock at 3 o'clock in the morning when the power's turned on, because that person knows how the energy system called electricity operates, knows how to work within its laws, and does things in a way that make it work. My grandmother, not knowing, is probably going to end up with a mess. If there's any arena in your life that you don't understand, and the way to tell whether or not you understand is there drama and trauma in any given arena in your life? We as human beings are not designed for any form of drama and trauma. It is not a requirement of life. But people look at the world and go, you know, why is there so much drama and trauma? There's one very simple reason. Whatever arena we engage in, without understanding that law happens, law requires and has no desire whatsoever for you to obey it, it just happens. If you wire the house properly, then what happens is the lights come on, the air conditioning works, the stove works. If you wire the house improperly, then the wire's short, the house burns down. It happens. And if in your relationships you're finding that your relationships are burning down, learn something about the laws of relationships. If in your relationship with your child things are burning down, learn something about the laws of relationship with a child. If your body's not doing well, learn something about the laws of nutrition. Learn where your food is being grown, how it's being grown, and is it being grown in a way that there's actually nutrition in it? If there's not, then you're going to have problems in that arena because law happens. Finances. If finances are a challenge for you, there's something that you don't know about the way money, that energy system works. And because you don't know, you don't harmonize with it. And if you don't harmonize with it, then the system burns down. And so we're here to support an understanding of how in every arena, and of course, for ourselves to learn on the deepest levels how every arena works in regard to law, and then bringing that forward to create a community of people who function truly out of that active space of love, out of the connected space of love, as we are designed to as humans, and to play a different game than the replicant mind has been feeding to us in the world for so long. So that's our purpose in being here, and we're delighted to have everybody who wants to come and play and join us. Judy, I have Judy sitting here with me. Jeannie's up in the office using a high-speed wireless to be able to run the show, the switchboard. And Judy from Heartland is sitting here with me in Branson. You look like you might have a question. Judy, do you have a question or thought for us?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay, cool. Well, Jeannie, do we have Dr. Tim with us today?
Dr. Tim is with us, and he's on.
Well, let's say hello to the young man and see what's on his mind today.
Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon, sir.
We're doing quite well here. We're glad that we found out. I am glad that I found out yesterday about Lady Jane's passing, so I could spend some time in prayer and remembering her and sending love and prayers to everybody who was blessed to know her. And
I'm trying to remember, were you at Heartland with her 1 year?
I was there twice with her.
Ah, okay, cool.
And years ago, my first trip to Heartland, she was there. And when I returned, I was doing the blog entries for the Mindshifter group almost every week that year. And Jane found out about it and read some of my blog entries and immediately emailed me and said, I've read your writing, and I just know from your writing you're going to love The Way of Mastery.
Right.
So I instantly ordered
it. I remember that she introduced you to it. I remember that.
Yeah. I instantly ordered it on her recommendation because I'd made such a solid connection with her at Heartland. I didn't even question it. I ordered it the same day I got the email. And I started carrying that book around, and people would ask me, what's that book? And rather than try to explain to them, well, it's kind of like A Course in Miracles, only it was channeled later. And I would just say to people, this book is singing to my soul. And every time I pick up the book, I think about Lady Jane and the gift that she gave me of introducing me to that work, whichever chapters I've read more times than I can count. And it's quite the gift to have known Lady Jane and to have her give me that access to that work. And in honor of her, I emailed somebody yesterday and passed along that connection to the Way of Mastery to somebody who'd never heard of it before.
Cool. And for those who are not familiar with the Way of Mastery, it's a book that parallels this work beautifully. Yehem is the author, and he's done some work with the Aramaic Beatitudes, just really right in harmony with everything that we're talking about.
Yeah,
Tim, I join you. I join you in holding that space of love for Lady Jane.
Yeah, it was quite a blessing to have met her and to have shared some conversations with her and emails over the years, and it certainly augmented the quality of my life to be introduced to that work through her. So,
I understand.
There's that going on, and then there's the Aramaic Beatitudes, and we listened to Yehem's version of that last Tuesday in the support group, and then we talked about it on Friday. And something was niggling in my brain as we were talking to Dale Ellen Hoffman last Friday. And so I broke out his version of the Aramaic Beatitudes again and listened to it twice over the weekend. And I have to ask you, Dr. Rice, have you ever listened to Dale's 2-CD set on the Aramaic Beatitudes?
I have not heard it, no.
Then you do not know the homage that he pays you and your work, and how there are times over and over in listening to Dale present that Dr. Michael Rice's words, phrases, pacing, and stories come out of Dale Ellen Hoffman.
Well, that's cool.
He says at one point in the work, as he's into the second CD about the Beatitudes, that the essence of this work has actually been given to us in a hard, in a piece of paper you can hold in your hand and do the essence of the work they're asking you to do in the Beatitudes. And that's from Dr. Michael Rice's forgiveness worksheet. So not only does he quote you and sound like you and talk with your phrases and your images at different times, he also directly credits you and says that the reality management worksheet is the living, breathing work that Yeshua was trying to tell us to do in the Beatitudes, available free in this worksheet.
Well, that's cool. I'll have to, I do have a set of them. I just have not sat down and listened to them. So I'll have to put them on at some point and give a listen. But, they say that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And, of course, I'm just delighted that he's passing it on, because the deepest intention of everything that we've developed is, I realize that as an individual, it's probably going to be a little difficult to get to 7.5 billion minds. And I love to have all the help I can get from my friends who are out there taking it and passing it on to somebody else and passing it on. It's fun to hear sometimes how things travel. I know that at one time we had a book that someone brought to an intensive and shared the story of its travel. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but, somebody in Arkansas ordered the book and passed it on to somebody in Oklahoma, who passed it on to somebody in California, who sent it to a soldier in the Middle East, who sent it to somebody in Germany. I mean, it was just fun to see how it moves. And so everybody that moves the work forward, I am so appreciative of the fact that I got to learn from the mouth of the Aramaic Yeshua through the Kabbalah's manuscript, and I'm just doing my part of being the conduit to pass it on. So it's pretty cool to be part of it.
Well, it is a blessing to be on the team, and it was a real wonderful addition to my weekend to listen to that again, and I'm going to offer it as an option with your Empowered to Heal DVD and the second part of it that goes into the Beatitudes, and it'll be interesting to see what the group chooses energetically to pick up on first. So for our next couple of weeks, we'll be sticking with the Aramaic and either Michael Rice or Dale Allen Hoffman in honor of Aramaic Fridays, which are happening. I think we have two more in this month.
Two more.
January.
Two more, and we do have a conversation about it continuing.
That's delightful.
Yes, yes. And while you're talking about the Beatitudes, and you know, it's about 30 years ago that I created that chart. I worked with the first century dictionary in the back of the Enlightenment book, and that's back when Dan McDougald was alive. So, you know, I didn't put anything in there until I had run it by Dan, because of course he's head and shoulders. I mean, I'm standing on Dan's shoulders in that regard, head and shoulders above what I'll ever know about the Aramaic. And of course, I'm willing to be taught. But there's, whenever I think about the Beatitudes, there's one piece that, you know, the way that the translation was done with that material was, it was very evidence-based. It had to work. But there was one piece that I'm realizing more and more the importance of, and Dan actually blocked me from putting it into the translation. He said, well, you know, we can't go quite that far. But with the work that I've done since then, I realized that probably back then we should have gone that far, but we didn't have the verification of the translation. But one of the Beatitudes can, and you know, at this moment, it's been so long ago since I did that original work, I don't remember which one it is now, but it could have been properly added to the Beatitude there, that the person who is in possession and control of the source of their thinking. And when I realize, and we've talked to, on the show about the idea of the OOTA, the Uta brain cells, and that suffix is one, and a unique thing about the Aramaic language is the adding of this suffix to any given word tells us that mind, its perception and behavior, and it's very specific that both perception and behavior are being controlled from the unconscious level. And that when we are in possession and control of, we no longer have any control factors coming from the unconscious. And that all added up leads me to believe that as true human beings, we're designed to function without any unconscious dynamics whatsoever. You know, the unconscious has been an artificial creation done through denial, done by, I talk about you as the cause of what's happening in me. And when I do that, whenever, and our whole world has been taught to do that. I mean, Jeannie and I, you know, we get up and we do a demonstration in the workshop of projection communication and then responsibility communication. And, you know, after the responsibility communication, you know, I demonstrate, I start out with projection and, you know, Jeannie gives me the look and you really hurt me, which when I say you really hurt me, I'm putting the power to cause my hurt outside of me on Jeannie, which is our working definition of denial, and that I dissociate from that. Now, that part of me with which I create my hurt, I'm dissociated from, and that part of my mind is now impervious to repair. I now have an unconscious. And, you know, I'll turn in the workshop, and I've done this with thousands and thousands of people, and I ask, you know, how many were brought up with the dad? You know, I'm demonstrating with Jeannie a couple's dynamic. How many were brought up with the dad who, you know, when, you know, there was conflict, said, you know, dear, when you say thus and so, I have a lot of rage come up and I want to heal my rage. And I mean, literally, virtually every time I offer that, there's a ripple of laughter that goes through. And the laughter's kind of a, oh, right, in my home, you got to be kidding me. And actually, for the first time, and I've been asking that question for years, Jeannie and I were on a yacht. Actually, we'd been invited onto this yacht to do a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop for a group of people. And there was a young man who was in his early 20s, and it's the first time I've ever had somebody put their hand up in answer to that question. A young man who saw in his father a man who, instead of using projection communication, used responsibility communication. And it turned out that this young man's father had studied with me about 25 years earlier. Otherwise, I've never had anybody who's had a father or a mother or a teacher or a preacher, for that matter, who, when they're in upset and disturbance, actually use responsibility communication and safe. And, of course, we've got a workshop called Communication. Did you hear what I think I said? And say, when they're in upset, you know, when you said thus and so, that really brought upset forward for me. And I realized that I need some support in cleaning up this upset. What the whole world has been taught is to create an unconscious condition for themselves. In other words, to willingly, and perhaps unconsciously, but willingly, to be out of touch with, to disown the source of their thinking. And this beatitude invites us back into coming into possession and control of the source of our thinking, to get rid of those unconscious dynamics. And when you realize the whole world has been steeped in this denial process, dissociation, which is the creation of an unconscious mind, to reverse it is just such a huge piece of work. Because it's been going on the planet. It's a genetic habit. It's been going on for centuries and centuries. So it's, you know, how it all ties together, and the genius that Yeshua had in putting this together and understanding it is just, it boggles my mind, pleasantly boggles my mind.
Well, you're not alone. It is refreshing to have my mind boggled in such a beautiful way over and over again.
Yes, yes, and you know I'm in love with the fact that we have this digital world now. In some ways, it may be our undoing, but the fact that you know all of these conversations are recorded for posterity, 2,000 years from now, people won't have to wonder about what this translation and that translation and that translation. They're going to be a digital file available where you and I had this conversation about what denial means, what dissociation means, what the Beatitudes mean. I mean, it's there. It's in the record. And, you know, with some of the other things that are coming online, some of the other things that we're working toward, you know, one of the images I hold in the back of my head, you know, we've got a couple of videos from A Course in Miracles, and I've always thought about and wanted to do the whole Course in Miracles in video. And if everything comes together in Costa Rica as we're planning and we create a video studio, then that's one of my goals is to begin to work, or one of the purposes for that project is to begin to work with going through the whole Course in Miracles and creating videos based on the Course, and to put this level of understanding and this slant on human function into the process. So I'm excited about that, because then that's going to be available for posterity as well.
Well, it wakes up brain cells in me when you say that. I remember being a senior in high school and listening to Jesus Christ Superstar over and over again and dissecting the words and thinking, at one point the song says, you know, Jesus, why did you come now? Israel in 4 BC has no mass communication. But now we do.
I was never really into that music, but I didn't realize that line was there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was something that we agonized about and thinking, yeah, you know, the message should have been given at a time when it could get worldwide. And So that's my offering for today. It's wonderful to have had things stirred up for me over the weekend and listen to the Beatitudes from Dale Allen Hoffman twice over the weekend, and I have a feeling I've created some new levels of brain cells, and the next time I listen with the group, it'll be even different, more different.
One of the other things, too, when you think about this thing called law and that it happens, is that once something comes into this energy field, then it is available to anybody who chooses to get out of the cultural mind sufficiently to listen deeply enough to receive it. It's there. You know, the fact that Yeshua, even though we didn't have our externalized system of mass communication, there was a mass communication system in place back then. It was called the mind. You know, physics is now telling us that every molecule in the universe is in continuous communication with every other molecule. And if we can, and you know, you've heard me say this so many times, in order to truly heal, in order to truly do your work, you got to be out of your mind. You got to get this carbon-based memory system, you got to get this body's mind to shut up. And when you do, then everything is available to you if you choose to listen. And so that mass communication system, you know, the Course in Miracles says all minds are in communication with each other all the time. But if we're in communication with minds in areas of our lives where we're in denial and dissociation, where we're unconscious, then those things aren't available to us. And they show up as disturbances and ripples in our fields and disturbances in our relationships and such, because we won't allow the truth to come forward fully. And, you know, that just brings us to another topic, and that is the topic of moving out of blockage of truth into love of truth, to really love truth sufficiently to allow the truth to show up all the time and to be willing to tell the truth, because the truth is there. The truth is being communicated. But when we live in a world of liars, which is basically what we're in today, you know, the whole thing's based on a lie, and most people would be insulted at, I'm calling them liars, but if you've ever said, you made me angry, you made me sad, you made me afraid, you hurt me, then you're lying. And that's what our culture's taught us to do from the word go. You know, another little story you heard me tell that maybe is appropriate here is, you know, the three-year-old that goes out in the backyard where mom is talking to Mrs. Jones across the fence, and Mr. Jones comes out, he's on his way to work, and he gives his wife a peck on the cheek, and off he goes. And little Johnny, living in the plane of energy, of truth and vibration, sees exactly the energy going on between mom and, or pardon me, between Mr. and Mrs. Jones. And he pipes up and says, gee, Mr. Jones, why do you hate your wife so much? Because he lives in the plane of truth and energy. Mom turns around with a slap on the face. Johnny, how dare you say such a thing to our neighbors? Don't you ever. And that's the beginning of blockage of truth, that we live in a culture that doesn't allow us to know the truth. And until we wake up and are willing to listen on that inner level of knowing, then whatever the cultural lie is tends to become most everybody's truth. And anyone who brings the truth forward brings stress up for those who live in the lie. And the purpose of this work is to bring our stress up, mine and yours too. If there's anywhere where we're still habitually lying to ourselves, we want the stress of that lie to come forward so it can be corrected and we can really truly join in living in truth. And that produces what in the ancient Aramaic, and you listen to it and it sounds like a religious phrase, but when you listen to it in the Aramaic, it's not a religious phrase at all. That's what the kingdom of God is made of. And the kingdom of God in Aramaic doesn't say anything about a king, and it doesn't say anything about the creator. What it says is the community of love. That's what the community of love is made of. When we each manifest in our bodies as the presence of love, rather than the unconscious dynamics of 1,000 generations of hate and fear and anger and suffering and death and murder and slaughter, and you know, when we undo, when we forgive all of that in ourselves, then we truly do live in the kingdom of God or the community of love. And of course, that's our purpose in having this radio show every day. That's our purpose in everything we do. That's what we, every resource we have is dedicated to. How do we get this out in a way that makes it available to one more mind, one more mind, one more mind, one more mind, and one more mind? And we certainly appreciate everybody who, in even the smallest way, you know, even if you never say a word, but you live truth, you live the internal process of forgiveness, you're communicating it and strengthening it on the planet. And what we're looking to do is to get to critical mass to bring it forward to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. That's our commitment. So let's check with Jeannie and see if she has any anything happening in the chat room for us to be aware of, or any callers with a hand up in the phone queue. Sweetheart?
Nobody has their hand up, but someone had asked me a question yesterday, and I thought they were going to call in and ask it themselves. But, you know, often we talk about a healing crisis and that when we have energies that go in, they create symptoms. And as we're healing and those energies are going out, they create symptoms, and that's what we call a healing crisis. And that it looks the same going both ways. So the question they asked me was, is it required to go through a healing crisis? I mean, often we do. I mean, you and I even do that. But is that required, or can you bypass doing a healing crisis when you're going through?
Well, you know, it's been called a healing crisis or a healing reaction. It doesn't have to be a deep, dirty, hard crisis if we're in a space of enough willingness. Willingness softens the field to let it open and to let the energy move out of the system. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, when you think in terms of, you know, let's listen to Einstein, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. So here's Einstein saying, there is no matter. Max Planck, the physicist, is receiving the Nobel Prize in physics. Here's what he says. As a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another within another. So whatever we nest in the field, on the way into the field, it's going to create effects. On the way out of the field, it's going to create the same effects. Many people would rather sweep it under the rug. You know, imagine you've got a house. And, of course, you know, people are going in and out and dirt tramps into the house, you know, skin cells slough off. And, you know, that's what dust is made of. It's dead skin cells. And imagine someone who says, well, you know, I don't want to take everything apart and do the house spring cleaning. I'm just going to sweep it all under the rug here. Well, sweeping it all under the rug and things look, you know, things look pretty cool. In fact, if you go back, that's Yeshua's definition of a Pharisee. He says, you keep the outside of the cup and the platter clean, but your inward parts are filled, he says, with hostility and fear. The Greeks translate it as ravening and wickedness, but it's really just hostility and fear. So if I sweep my hostility and fear under the rug, that's like putting the dirt under the carpet. Well, if all the dead skin cells, all the dust, all the dirt that's tracked in, the odd bug that, you know, that gets squashed, if it's all just swept under the rug, what does it become? It becomes an attractive energy source that draws somebody who wants to eat. It's a food supply. And so what's going to show up? Well, the cockroaches have now got food. If you feed them, they're going to come. The mice have got food. The critters have got something to eat, so they're going to show up. And the same way that happens inside of a house, that happens within our physiology. If I'm a Pharisee, if I keep everything nice and neat, now I keep the house clean, you know, there's no dirt, there's not one spot, there's not one thing out of place. But inside of me, I'm filled with hostility and fear. I just created a food supply. If I refuse and I'm willing to face that and process through it, then I'm in trouble. There's actually a film I was going to talk about today. Jeannie and I went to see, and it is right up there with one of the number one films of all time, for me, of a demonstration of what happens when people won't deal with their lives and what happens when they begin to deal with their lives, how the changes take place, what kind of crisis happens. This film just in a brilliant way depicts the whole healing process, and it's a true story. So if you haven't seen it yet, put it on your calendar. It's right up there with the movie Orphans. You know, last year we talked about the movie Orphans, very powerful demonstration of the principles of healing. Well, to me, Saving Mr. Banks is right up there with the process of showing the film Orphans in showing the process of healing. And, you know, if you're not familiar with the story, it's the story of Mary Poppins. And Mary Poppins was written by an English woman who was very, what words can I use? Angry, uptight, supposedly prim and proper and controlling, and everything had to be exactly her way. And Walt Disney's children had read her book, Mary Poppins, and loved it when they were very small, and Walt Disney contacted her and wanted the rights to turn it into a movie. And she refused. And every year for 20 years, Walt Disney contacts her and says, I want to make this movie. I promise my children I make this movie. So finally, this woman with the lifestyle she lives is out of money, and her agent convinces her to at least go to Hollywood and visit Walt Disney. And she's like, I'm going to be in control of this film. And everything that has anything to do with aliveness, joy, and fun, she will not allow. And I mean, this is a true story at the end of it. She insisted that everything that they did, she's with the writers and the people who are doing the music, she insisted it all be recorded. At the end of the film, they actually record her voice. And the woman who plays her in the movie, I mean, sounds like just exactly like her. And from the segment that they played of the actual original audio tapes, this goes back when Mary Poppins was being produced, it sounds just exactly like her. And this woman is in such trauma. And finally, you know, after they've put in, I don't know how much time, I mean, a huge amount of time, and so that I don't give the whole film away, Walt Disney goes to her. She's in the studios, and, you know, finally things are starting to break loose a little bit. And one of the things that she felt Walt Disney promised her wasn't fulfilled, so in anger she gets back on a plane and goes back to England. She's not going to allow the film to be made. Within hours, Walt Disney is at her door. He caught a plane and goes to her and has a conversation about forgiveness. And it shows her through the making of the film, her healing crisis, as she goes back and she's processing her relationship with her father. And the whole story of Mary Poppins, you know, you've heard me say on the show before, everything is autobiographical. The whole story of Mary Poppins is just the story of this little girl whose aunt comes when her father is dying, and the terror and trauma that she goes through, and the aunt became the solution as Mary Poppins comes in with these kids and becomes the solution to their problem. It's just a powerful, powerful story of healing. And, you know, they had the awareness to show her flashing back to all these scenes with her father, right down to the point where there's a particular type of fruit which she won't have anything to do with. And you wonder when she goes to Washington or to Hollywood, you know, they've got a big bowl of fruit, and she goes over and, you know, one of the pieces of fruit in the bowl is pears. And so she picks out all the pears and opens the door and throws them out the door. No pears here. And it's just so exacting of this replicant mind. And later in the movie, you see her processing, and again, without giving it away, the trauma that's going on. And she's gone to get her father some pears. And while she's gone, something very dramatic happens, and she drops the pears. And here she is, I don't know, the woman's probably in her 60s. Here she is 50 years later, and she literally throws four pairs out of the window of her hotel suite into the hotel swimming pool based on UTA brain cells, based on something that happened to her when she was 11 years of age. Here she is controlled by that. It's such an awesome demonstration of the whole process of healing. Go see it. It's an amazing film. Very powerful. And Mr. Banks is the name of her father. And so the Mary Poppins whole story becomes, and what Walt Disney finally convinces her, because she's afraid that people, the basic underlying point of her life is she's got to protect her brain's image of her father. And Walt Disney figures this out and says to her, I promise you, we're going to save your father. I was just, whew, awesome. Saving Mr. Banks. Go see it. It's on the theaters right now. Powerful. So do we have to go through our healing process? Well, the end result, of course, Mary Poppins got made. And it was a result of Walt Disney's conversation about how he's going to, through the film, support a reality of this 11-year-old girl being healed, and it's going to be done with forgiveness. It's amazing. Powerful.
And I'd like to add to that he doesn't see that solution until he deals with some of his own demons, too. And then he's able to see where hers are coming from. And we do have a caller with their hand up.
Cool. Let's give a listen. So the bottom line is, do we have to go through the healing process? Absolutely.
Absolutely. Hi, this is Sunny.
Area code 765, you're on the air.
Hey, this is Sunny.
Hey there, young lady.
Hey. I want to thank you very much, Michael, for the courtesy call regarding Reverend Jane yesterday. She obviously is how I come to know you, and having been her Sunday school teacher for several years. And much of what I also shared with you yesterday, after we spoke quite late last night, I left on foot and went for a very long walk, about 7 miles to town. And I question, and this being maybe a healing crisis overall of my circumstances, and just hoping that I'm being very graceful in my perception of this experience. Would you perceive this maybe to be that?
Well, I don't have many details to go on.
Okay. Without story so much, but descriptives, been toddling along through this life recovery of the extended illness, and putting the whole life back together under the circumstances that I do deal with regarding my daughter and legalities.
Right.
We stay self-employed, and then I meet with a lot of scrutiny and judgment from other people. So I just keep going, and my van is sitting in Columbus, Ohio. If it's not broke, you don't fix it. The van is all new, and now it needs its head gasket replaced. It's a 77, and its time has come. So
I'm not sure what the healing crisis, what you're asking about the healing crisis.
Things,
I don't know where that fits.
The putting the life back together is dictated largely by finances, and my van is a huge part of that. Needing a second, more practical vehicle, I'm just really kind of wondering if this isn't a good example for people, too. My van's sitting in Columbus, Ohio. I have minimal means of ready finances, a couple $100 to work with, and I'm just exploring
I need to put you on hold. I need to get you to hold for a minute. We're down to about 45 seconds, and I'm not sure where your question fits in. Is what a healing crisis? You're going for a walk? I don't understand how that fits. But we've only got about 30 seconds. So.
Yes. Our clocks are different from one another's, Michael. I do apologize. So,
okay.
Yeah. So if you want to wrap up the show, and maybe we can get together some other way, maybe. Okay?
Yeah, the show would be the way to do it if there's a question. But I need to know what I'd like when you call back in, if you call in tomorrow, is when you say to me, is this a healing crisis? Are you going for a walk? I don't know. I need to know what your exact question is, and we do have to close the show out. We appreciate everybody for being here with us, and we ask you to please give the best gift you can to the world. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.